All right, welcome all. Thank you very much for your prompt arrival. I think we've got just about everybody with us, but we'll confirm that with a roll call. Brandy, would you mind?
Not a problem. Judge Conklin?
I'm here.
Rebecca Fleming, absent today. Judge Getty? Judge Fannin?
Here.
Judge Gabe is absent today. Judge Kelly?
Here.
Judge Larsh?
Present.
Thank you. Judge Merrifield?
Present.
Judge Reinhardt?
Present.
Judge Ryan? Judge Sachs?
Here.
Judge Siebert?
Here.
Ms. Bartleson?
Here.
Ms. Cameron?
Here.
Thank you. Mr. Finke? He may be late today. Both Mr. Kim and Mr. Landry are absent today. Ms. Levere? Mr. Riley?
Here.
Thank you. Mr. Rule?
Here.
Mr. Taniguchi? Mr. Yamasaki? Advisory members, Mr. Wardlaw?
Yes, here.
Thank you. And Mr. Theodorovic?
Here.
And our liaison member, Judge Kalamkarian? Judge Kalamkarian. All right.
All right. Thanks so much, Brandy. And again, thank you, everybody, for your arrival. I'm sure those folks will catch up to us soon. A few of them deemed themselves absent, but others, I'm hoping, will be with us very quickly. We've got a nice agenda today. I think we'll occupy us for at least a portion of those 2 hours we have set aside. Briefly, as we do to start every meeting, I'd ask for a motion to approve the minutes of our September 8th meeting.
Rule moves.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Second, Larsh.
Very good. Thank you. Any abstentions?
Bartleson, I was absent.
Reinhardt,
Riley was absent.
Let's see, Bartleson, Reinhardt, and Riley. I think I heard all abstain.
And Fannin. I think I was gone.
Okay.
Merrifield was not present.
Great. You know, and now that, we've done this, and not to make a, but my understanding is a member does not need to be present to approve the minutes. But Brandy, can we just get that confirmed by our next meeting?
Yes, we can. Thank you.
I'm just a little concerned that we'd have a number of, given our absences, do we have enough members present to approve the minutes and our abstentions?
Can I verify that by the end of the meeting, Judge?
Sure. So I'm going to show, is there any other member that either abstains or objects to the approval of the minutes? Hearing none. So, Brandy, I'm sorry.
Judge Conklin, if need be and we run into a quorum, could I give a conditional approval upon verification of the work that Brandy's going to do?
So what I'm going to do is I'm going to show that you've all abstained, and we'll mark those abstentions. We'll show that we believe we have a quorum available to approve the minutes, but by the end of the meeting, if not, we'll circle back. Because I'm hopeful
Sounds
by
good.
Then a few stragglers will have joined us. Nothing critical, but we have to follow the rules because that's what we do. So thank you very much for all that. And Brandy, as I understand it, there are no public comments for today's meeting?
Correct.
Great. Okay. So let's get into the five agenda items. As we typically do, I will introduce each of these agenda items and then turn it over to folks that are much more knowledgeable than I am about most of the material and let them present. I would just note in introduction, three of these items, item one, item three, and item five, come to us right from the funding methodology subcommittee that met last week with, I believe, unanimous approval and recommendation to tick back. They will then, as the other two items will, be presented right away next week to the Judicial Branch Budget Committee for hopeful movement to the final Judicial Council vote for their December meeting. So with that, we're going to turn first to item number one, which is a consideration of a funding methodology for, and it's a recommendation for the CARE courts. This is the beginning of this process, folks, and Don Will is going to present for us in just a minute. I anticipate that we will have this on our agenda for quite some time, because that's what we do, is we continue to monitor and make recommendations about allocations for these funding sources, and the CARE Act is a new one. This comes to us, and as Don will explain, this is a beginning implementation of a very few number of courts, what we call the first cohort courts, or seven courts, for essentially planning and implementation. And these courts will be spending this in the next year by October 1st, 2023. So with that very general introduction, we'll turn to Don. Don, thanks again. As always, I'll turn it over to you.
Thanks, Judge. My name's Don Will, and I am from the Judicial Council Center for Families, Children, and the Courts. As I'm sure everyone is aware, the CARE Act is establishing a court-based mental health services engagement and oversight program for individuals with schizophrenia spectrum and other psychotic disorders. As Judge Conklin said, the Act contemplates that all courts will be eventually participating, but that there should be an initial cohort of seven courts to pick up and plan implementation this year and begin implementation of the CARE Act by next October, October 2023. The CARE Act budget includes both operations and administration funding for courts as they begin their implementation phase. In this current planning phase, it includes the $2.8 million we're talking about today. This is $2.8 million in administrative funds to be made available to those first seven cohort courts to plan during this fiscal year and through October for their implementation. In the next fiscal year, the next tranche of administrative and operational funding will then be made available. So the funding methodology subcommittee looked at several ways to allocate the funding across these seven courts. The funding available was based on an estimate that statewide, not court by court, but statewide, the courts would require two FTE each, not each, but statewide prorated to implement this, and that the cost of that would be $195 per FTE. So that's a total of this year, 2.8 for the seven courts. How to allocate it, the funding methodology subcommittee looked at the proposals that were also recapped in the attachment by pro rata by county population, by total filings, or by the workload formula, or by the workload formula, but with a base of $49,000 to ensure that small courts had sufficient resources to plan implementation. The $49,000 was calculated as a quarter FTE of the average $195 used in the budget estimate. So then the funding methodology subcommittee is forwarding three recommendations. The first is to approve that the CARE Act Cohort 1 courts are allocated the funding by workload formula with a 0.25 FTE base. That's displayed in Attachment 1A. Also, that TICBAC performs a reconciliation using CARE Act spending reports and court projections to document the spending of the funds. And finally, that the committee and council direct the funding methodology subcommittee to, as Judge Conklin said, return to the larger question of this rather complicated implementation, which includes courts implementing it in phases through 23-24 and into 24-25, additional operations funds, additional administrative funds, and develop an allocation methodology for the CARE Act funding in 2023 and 2024. I would be happy to answer any questions.
Don, thank you very much. As always, efficient and effective. We appreciate that. The recommendations that Don is describing for you are set forth at page 7 of your materials. And with that, any questions for Don or for the good of the order before I ask for a motion? Any concerns?
Go ahead. I'm sorry. This is Judge Siebert. You know, I'm on that subcommittee. Unfortunately, I was in a murder trial and I couldn't attend that meeting. We also happen to be one of the 7 cohort courts. And in looking at the, I understand all of the sort of fairness ideas of population, case filed, and so forth. But the reality of this care court situation is that every court, regardless of size, is going to have a program manager, for example, to implement this thing and run it, which means that we have to have somebody new. It's essentially a new position. We obviously can try to use somebody that, who has extra capacity within the court clerk staff, but it seems like it's one of those things where everybody, these expenses, there are certain expenses that are clearly scaled, if you will, based on the size of counties and stuff. But if, for example, you have a rule that says every court must have a car, well, it doesn't matter what your population is, you still got to buy the car. You need the money to buy the car. And it seems to me that to allocate, it, even with the one that they're talking about, $49,000, that's not going to allow small courts to create a complete new court program that has a lot of effort to be put into it. You know, we've looked into it because we are part of the first cohort courts. It just seems to me that the normal way we do budgeting, it doesn't really fit with the situation that we're being put into, being part of the care court program, whether you're the first cohort court or otherwise. But I just feel like it doesn't make sense to use formulas that we've used for other things when you're creating something entirely new and being essentially forced to create it. So that's my 2 cents. I wish I would have been at the subcommittee meeting. I could have been there to at least express that on behalf of smaller courts who are faced with this situation. I wasn't, and you know, that's unfortunate because once again, when you're in a small court, we have 4 judges, 2 are retired. So we got 2 judges and we're trying to do everything, including keeping the trials going. It's not possible always to break out in the middle of the day to do a committee meeting. But anyway, that's my 2 cents.
Sure, and a valid 2 cents they are. And I don't know if either Zlock or others want to come in. My recollection is, as I was at the meeting, we did discuss this. And Judge Siebert, you're right, there's no perfect solution. This is a relatively small, perhaps even a sliver of the money still to come for a very, very short implementation period. And my recollection of the discussion was this is, again, just money intended to help folks start to get this program in place, recognizing they're going to need much more when they get it up and running. But I don't know, John or Zlotko or anybody else, if you wanted to supplement my comments.
Yeah, thank you, Judge. Just in brief, this is the beginning investment in CARE Act funds, and so there will be increasing resources in the next year. But I think it is up to the committee to determine whether or not they think that there's some minimum level beyond $49,000. I understand that the funds do start mid-year, and so in essence, that might cover some of those costs for a full cost of a position.
Well, and there is the problem. The expectation for the first cohort courts, and we happen to be one, so I know about it, is that we're going to be up and running. It's not like you know, we have to be partway ready. Our obligation under this, the way this is set up, because there are counties that are getting additional money as well for the behavioral health people and so forth and so on, that's independent of the court. I think it's $20 million or something like that. But none of that helps us create a new position in our court. And so, you know, while people are saying, yeah, this is a phase-in, it's not really a phase-in. I don't think that's an accurate statement. We're supposed to be running. So you can't call it a phase-in if you're actually supposed to be doing it, not just getting a head start on it. We're supposed to be running this court by October 2023. And so to say, here's $49,000, you know, implement this program seems unrealistic by any stretch of the imagination. And again, what are we supposed to do with $49,000? You can't hire somebody for $49,000. You certainly can't put in all kinds of new processes in place, modify. There's apparently going to be some money that's going to be used to modify our existing computer software to be able to calendar events that aren't normally part of our e-court system and other things. You know, $49,000, it sounds like a lot of money. I mean, when you just do the percentages, but when you say every court has to have a car, you know, it doesn't matter if you're in Orange County or you're in Tuolumne County, if you have to have a car, there's a certain cost of getting that car. And I'm using that just as an analogy. I just don't see how this is realistic in any way, shape or form to the smaller counties who are having to implement something ahead of time. I know that next year, when other courts have to get in play, you know, there's going to be additional allocation, but that's to be able to get them up to speed. And there's going to be a discussion at that point, I assume, that's going to say, well, the seven that have already gotten money don't get more money.
Oh, I don't think that's correct.
They got their money.
I don't think that's, John, is that, I'm sorry, Judge, I didn't mean to cut you off, but
that's all right.
I don't think this, am I wrong?
This administrative funding stream continues, but it is budgeted at 2 FTE statewide, which is, I think, 116 FTE total statewide. When we are fully up and running, that's how the administrative stream is budgeted. But yes, it comes every year. It's an annual allocation.
Now I understand that, but the annual allocation is to maintain and continue on what you've already been doing. If you're our court, or for example. And then for the new courts, they're implementing. But certainly, I think people realize there's a startup cost that is different than maintenance cost of a program. And, you know, I don't know, and maybe it won't be that way, that the next groups of courts that come in, there'll be nothing that'll be adjusted based on the first cohort courts. But the fact of the matter is, you still have to, we have to be up and running in October of 2023 with $49,000. That doesn't seem realistic, regardless of what happens the next year. If we're supposed to be running, and that's the commitment that's been made by everybody at the county level as well, because we've been talking with our county administrative officer, we have to be running. And, you know, it's just not realistic to say $49,000, you're going to have a whole new court calendar with a new full-time person coordinating it and dealing with all the stuff that you have to do internally from a, what the right word would be, procedures or operational standpoint to get all the forms and the filing procedures and all that stuff. I mean, it just, again, I wasn't at that meeting, and I apologize for that. And I'm injecting stuff that I should have been injecting at that meeting. But I just want this group to understand that what the concerns are of small courts like ours, who are, you know, jumping into this thing early. You know, there was a lot of arm twisting to get counties to get involved, and they've gotten involved, and it just seems like a difficult task to ask them to do for $49,000. So. that's my two cents again.
I appreciate that. So I saw Kim's hand up, but before that, Don, did you have anything to on Judge Siebert's comments about the cause? I mean, we can, if we want, we can consider supplementing that or expanding that. Again, an FTE is, and I'm looking at the report, $195,000 per FTE. So this is limited money to all the courts, but I understand Judge Siebert's position that a car is a car, whether it be in Fresno or wherever it be. Kim, I saw your hand up. Did you have any comments on what Judge Siebert was just saying?
No, I just wanted to throw out, first off, this initial funding is for to begin the planning process with the right. implementation later in October. And it also is my understanding that after we hit the first year through this initiation of the funding process or planning process, they'll be able to better gauge what the needs are as far as a program. So I echo the judge's concerns, but unless I'm missing something, this is just to start the ball for planning rolling so that they can accurately size what the need is. And there might be opportunity to partner with some of the county justice partners are going to be in the loop with this, or in small court situations to see what might be able to be done with another small court. So just ideas. But I echo the concern, and it is what it is.
So Don, could you or somebody else clarify that? Judge Siebert's made clear that his position is this means they're up and running with their care court in October 23 versus planning to be up and running.
October 23 is when the court, yes, has to start hearing CARE Act cases. This funding is available through them the next piece of administrative funding also becomes available at the beginning of FY 23-24, so becomes available next July. And the recommendation 3 would be that the kickback would be kind of taking a deeper dive into these questions, gathering information from the courts that need to plan in the latter half of this year and in the fall, and coming up with an allocation methodology for the full amount for the courts that we'll be getting in next fiscal year. Does that answer your question, Judge?
I think it does. And Judge Siebert, does that give any clarification?
It's clarification, but to be up and running, you have to hire somebody. You can't wait until July to hire somebody, for example, just using that as one example of one of the many pieces that are involved in being ready to run in October. So, you know, to say that you're going to get $49,000 and you're going to get all of this stuff done, and then you're going to get a little bit more in July, I mean, to be ready in October, you have to be well underway, including having hired a coordinator and everyone else before July to be running in October. So it just doesn't seem realistic to say we want you to, it's not just a ramp up, it's a full go in October. And to say, well, you're going to get in July of 2020, well, for next fiscal year, you know, the allocation that every other court's going to get. Well, every other court doesn't have to be ready in October of 2023. They don't have to be ready till October 2024, but they're getting the full amount of the money that's going to be available.
And Judge Siebert, we can modify this at this point. This is just a recommendation from FMS. So do you have a thought or a suggestion about modifying the recommendation?
Yeah, I think the 49 is not enough. You know, what is enough? I don't know. I had our financial people run this a while ago, and they sent me a whole spreadsheet of everything. But it was, you know, from their perspective, it was over $100,000. I'm not saying that we're going to get $100,000 by this discussion, but I'm just saying 49 is like not even close.
Okay.
And so
Judge Getty,
that's where I'm at.
Okay. Judge Getty, I saw your hand up. Or did I? You're muted. I can't hear you. You're still muted. Judge Getty, for some reason, you're not coming through. In Can we get some help for Judge Getty? Yeah, still can't hear you. Do you know sign language? So, Judge Siebert, you said, and again, I'm just trying to facilitate the discussion. You've said that you have information from your admin that 49 isn't going to be enough to get the job done, and then you mentioned 100. You know, a lot of this has to do with, and I know you're probably familiar with it, but we've all been down the road of the workload formula and how that applies to the to all these really small courts, and nothing's perfect. So are you moving that we consider, as far as the recommendation, we change the floor of 49,000 to 100,000?
Yes, for those courts? Yes, because it gets back to my analogy. If we all have to get a car, we all have to get a car. And you're not going to be able to hire somebody to be a coordinator for this job and get everything running without paying a salary. And the 100 is obviously beyond what the salary is going to be, because there's other administrative costs associated with this. But, right. You know, that's all I'm trying to get to. Thanks.
Okay. Judge Getty, I think, are you back with us? You're not. I'm really sorry. I don't know what the problem is.
No, Judge Getty, this is Brandy. I sent you a message. If you want to even chat me the question or comment you have, we can share it out with the rest of the team. Okay, and then Brandon had his hand up, Judge.
Brandon?
Hi. So being on FMS, I thought that the funding was for the first 6 months. I mean, the first funding will end. This funding is until June 30, 2023. Is that correct?
That is correct. It needs to be spent. It will need to be spent or encumbered by June 30.
Right. So this is just the initial funding, and additional funding will come July 1. Is that correct? So it's not just 49,000. The 49,000 is for the first phase of the implementation, and then there's an ongoing allocation after July 1 at the start of next fiscal year. So it's more than $49,000. Is that correct?
Yes.
It will be.
It will be, but this funding stream on the administrative funding side, not the operations, is it per proportional to the courts, it doesn't get bigger. We have it's capped at this calculation for 2 FTE for all 58 courts. So as all 58 courts come in, I mean, I think the same issues will remain. So, but we do, yes, there's whatever we allocate, there's that allocation, and then beginning in July 1, the next tranche of administrative funding is available, as well as the operations funding for courts that have to begin having hearings.
So as I understand Judge Siebert's concern, and Judge Siebert, obviously, I don't mean to, but his position is, yeah, but we have to be up and going by October of 23. So we need more money before the July allocation. We need more money. So Judge Siebert, as I understand it now, and we discuss it informally, but I need to know, are you making a motion to modify the recommendation that the it be bumped up from a 0.25 full-time equivalent to a 0.50 full-time equivalent, which would take it up to $98,000.
Yes, and we're going to be, you know, that half full-time equivalent is for a half a year, right? I mean, that's what we're really talking about. And I guess my response to the, right now we're talking about a budget allocation that is for this first group of courts. In July, every court is going to be involved. And what if we went back to some of the other suggestions that are in this memo or spreadsheet And, you know, like one of my, I don't have it up because I'm looking at the camera here, but the, you know, it showed 18,000 for a small county like Glenn County or Tuolumne County, or then other, where there was a 20 something thousand, and all of those numbers with all of the normal ways that we budget with filings or percentage of population or workflow formula, those numbers will never get to 49 again for this, for those smaller courts. In other words, it's not like we can just say, well, this 49 really, it turns into 100 because in July we'll get another 49. That's not any way guaranteed. What is guaranteed is that we must hire somebody, the small courts must hire people with the expectation that they're going to be fully operational by October. And we don't know what additional funding is going to be coming in down the road for those courts.
You're correct. So, yeah. We don't, but we know there's a lot more work to do. So we know right. that this is going to come back through FMS and come back through TICBAC well before July. And there's a lot more money coming out. So we're anticipating the July allotment is going to be a much larger chunk of change than this allotment. But again, just to get back
the difference is, all the other courts, not the first seven, all the other courts are going to have the advantage that when it is time for them to implement, there will be a bigger chunk of money, and they'll know exactly what it's going to be down the road. We're the guinea pig group jumping in here, trying to get this thing up and running, not knowing what the future holds, where the other people have the benefit of knowing what the money is going to be before they really have to implement. But we're in the position that's a little different than that, and that's why I think this is a bit different situation. So back to your question to me before I rambled, yes, I'm suggesting that the number 49 is too small. I threw out a suggestion of 100. I'm not right. saying that is an absolutely correct number, but I think it's close.
So we have to talk, we have to be sort of specific. So the motion that's pending before the group now, folks, is that we modify the recommendation and change the 0.25 FTE to 0.50, which would take the allocation for both Glenn and Tuolumne from 49,000 to 98,000. Now, mathematically, that $50,000 would just be redistributed. It would slightly reduce the allocation to the remaining five courts, but only by $100,000 spread over those five courts. So it's a very, very small difference. I think Judge Siebert makes a valid point. But again, reminding everybody that Judge Siebert, too, you're right, you're the guinea pig. But on the other hand, there's a lot more work to be done before we feed the guinea pig again. So
I understand.
We're going to do our best. So is there a second to the motion to approve the recommendation as stated, except to change at item one, it would say approve for the care courts, the 22-23 scenario allocation by final workload allocation with a 0.50 FTE base. Is there a second
Bartleson
to that motion?
Seconds.
Bartleson seconds. Now it's been moved and seconded. Again, with that minor change.
We do have a note from Judge Getty, if you don't mind if I share with the members. The difficulty is anticipating the workload. CARES Court is very similar to Laura's Law. How many Laura's Law petitions are small courts getting?
Well, that's the interesting question. And we've thought that through with the CARE Court people as well. And frankly, you know, there are people who feel that there's not going to be a huge number because of the difficulty of getting through the petition process. For example, in the CARE Court, you have to, as part of your petition, file an affidavit that says you have this diagnosed disease. And we know that many people that we deal with that have mental health issues, our homeless population, it's drug addicts, et cetera, they're not going to doctors and getting that diagnosis. And so we're concerned that the hope of the CARE Court is going to be diminished some based on the fact that the difficulty of getting people to get petitions that can be accepted because they meet the criteria. But here's the problem. Regardless of the number of people that are going to be doing it, it's a completely new program that we need to hire somebody to be a coordinator for. And at least until we can find out exactly how many it's going to be. And not, with that expectation that we're going to be up and running by October of 2023, we have to hire somebody, and everybody has to hire a somebody. Some courts will have to hire more than one somebody, but at minimum, everybody has to have one. And that's where the analogy of the car comes in.
And Chris, I saw your hand up, but Don, can you clarify that for us? Does a court have the discretion to take an employee that is in an administrative position and designate them, for instance, half to their role as administrator of a care court, or is each court required to independently hire a brand new administrator?
There's no requirements around personnel, and there's no requirements to use this funding on personnel. It's general fund to assist the courts in their administration. The way it was estimated, it doesn't carry over into the restriction. So our court could use it to fund current staff.
So Judge Siebert, as I understand it, not to oversimplify, but you could use your existing car, to use your analogy, if you think that car will get the job done.
Yeah, assuming you have that excess capacity for the use of that car, obviously,
sure.
Yes.
Absolutely.
But he makes a good point as well, that there are certain... There's a certain amount of work that everybody's going to have to do to implement this program that is universal across everybody. And when you start a new program, everybody has to, you know, do that new program. I get it. But there's an upfront expense to doing that that is, it's not scalable. Everybody has to do it. And some people are going to have to do more of it, but everybody has to do a minimum amount of it. And that minimum amount of it costs a significant amount of money. So that's where the point goes.
Good point. Chris, did you have your hand up?
Yes. Thank you, Judge. And part of my point is I am always hesitant to modify a recommendation from FMS, partly because, you know, the process that we have in place for TICPAC, where, you know, that's the committee that's designated to really flesh out these issues and make a recommendation. And so I'm feeling that hesitance at this moment. And so having heard all of the points, which I think are all very valid, and so I just wonder if there's anyone who is on the FMS committee, I know Brandon already spoke, which I appreciate, who would like to offer a perspective on this based on the discussions that happened at FMS around this recommendation.
I was the chair of it along with Chad, but I don't think Chad, is Chad with us today?
Judge Conklin, I am here by phone.
Okay. So anything you want to add, Chad? And my best recollection is, I think you're both correct. This is a brand new program coming up. We are all very hopeful about how impactful this program will be for litigants to come to the court. But we don't know how many of those litigants are going to be. We don't know what the costs are going to be. So Judge Siebert makes a good point. We have to account for some upfront work to be done. But the sort of the perspective of FMS, and I think Chad might be able to add some of this too, is we're just starting off. So we're just trying to get the seed money out so the courts can start to plan. Now, that being said, it doesn't strike me, just as one member of FMS, that the increase here from a 0.25 to a 0.50, which is a total of $100,000 out of 2 million plus, really is going to make that much of a difference. And so I think it addresses Judge Siebert's concern. Chad, what any thoughts you want to add?
No, I agree with your take on it, Judge Conklin. I mean, you're right that the main thing that FMS was, I would say, had on its mind was just the urgency to get the money out. I don't think there was sort of a deep dive at the level that we're talking about now as between a 0.25 FTE and, for example, a 0.5 FTE. So I agree with your analysis that if we were to go with what's on the table right now, spreading the 100,000, you know, the reduction of 100,000 across the other five courts, I don't think that would be a significant change in those numbers. My take is I don't know that would seriously upset any apple cart that FMS had on its mind.
I agree. I think to get if I don't mean to speak for all the FMS members, and there's a few more with us, but Chad is right. I don't think that minuscule change would have caused us to make a change. So with that, we have a motion and a second, as noted now. Any further discussions or comments? Hearing none. So I just ask if there's any opposition. I'm just going to be a little bit different. Well, it's so hard on Zoom. So let me phrase it that way. Are there any members that are in opposition to the motion with the amendment as stated? Okay, hearing none, then I'll deem the amended recommendation unanimously approved by TICBAC to go to JBBC with that 0.50 change.
And Chad, this is Brandy. I see Chris's hand up. Chris, did you have anything before we move to the next item?
Thank you, Brandy. No, I just forgot to take my hand down.
Thank you.
Story of my life, too. Thanks, Chris. Okay, great. That gets us through item number one. We're now moving to item number two, and this is the Model Self-Help Program, consideration of one-time funding allocations for the Model Self-Help Pilot Program. And Melanie Snyder is with us for that. Melanie, are you here?
I am. Good afternoon.
Welcome to the
show. Sorry, I couldn't appear by camera. I'm having some technology issues, but I am here. So, and thank you for allowing me to appear today. The Model Self-Help Technology Program allows self-help, court-based self-help programs to expand the use of technology for self-help assistance. And in 2021, the Judicial Council approved the use approved the recommendation to allow all trial courts to apply for the funding. So currently, the funding includes $191,400 to distribute. For the current round, 13 courts submitted 15 applications, requesting a total of $699,635. To ensure the most effective use of the funding, CFCC staff coordinated with the Court Technology Modernization Fund staff and the Language Access Signage Technology Grant Review staff, and we identified together that there were $306,783 in self-help applications that could be funded through those other sources. So that left us 9 applications. One application was not approved because it proposing a document assembly program solution that is currently being addressed on a statewide level. So we didn't want to duplicate efforts. But currently, there are 8 trial courts that their programs are recommended in Table 2 of Attachment A, and we would like to recommend that the committee approve the level of suggested funding for those 8 programs.
Very concise, Melanie. Thank you so much. So, folks, the recommendation that was just suggested is set forth at page 11 of 26. It's an entire paragraph. I know I read fast, but I'm not going to read it. You can all read unless there's any questions. So before I call for a motion, are there any questions of Melanie about the recommendation for the use of this self-help pilot program? I don't see any hands. I want to make sure I haven't missed any. Assuming none, is there a motion?
Bartleson moves for approval as presented.
Is there a second?
Rule seconds.
Moved and seconded that the recommendation set forth at page 11 of 26 of your materials for item 2 be approved for consideration to JBBC. Is there any opposition to the motion? Hearing none, as the chair, I'll deem the motion unanimously approved. Melanie, thank you so much for your presentation.
Judge Conklin?
Thank you.
Yes.
You've been referencing page 11 of 26, but the
The actual numbers are the ones that are set forth on page 12, right? The eight different courts and the amounts for each one?
Yep. You're correct, Judge Kalmakarian. That's table two that you referred to. You're absolutely correct. So those are the new eight courts for the allocation of those eight courts. Thanks for clarifying that. So the recommendation includes table two.
Thank you.
That's why he's our presiding judge. Thanks. All right. Now to item number three, the base funding floor inflationary increase. This is, again, comes to us from FMS, and this is an update for the funding floor process for automatic inflationary increases that the other courts enjoy. We've discussed this before, but this is a slight modification to make sure it applies to those other courts. And Oksana is with us, I hope. There she is. Oksana, as always, welcome, and I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you very much, Judge Conklin. Good afternoon, everyone. This is Oksana Tak, Senior Analyst with Budget Services. This report is to assist the committee in considering a recommendation to update the annual base funding flow process to include the automatic increases for two base funding flow courts, Alpine and Sierra. When the workload formula was first approved, a funding floor was established to reflect the cost of the minimal level of court operations that were operational funding needs above of what the workload formula provided. Based on the staffing needs and operational costs at that time, the base funding floor amount of $750,000 was approved by the Judicial Council effective 2014-15. There have been two subsequent council-approved increases to the funding floor. The 50,000 inflationary adjustment that was effective in 2019-20, and mostly recently, 150,000 inflationary adjustment approved by the council this past March, increasing the base funding floor to $950,000, effective in 2022-23. The base funding floor is ongoing set funding amount as approved by the council and is currently allocated outside of workload formula. As a result, it does not always recognize cost changes that courts within the workload formula are eligible to receive, including the inflationary cost increase funding. During the November 2021 FMS and TIGBEC meetings, when Alpine's and Sierra's request to increase base funding flow amount was under consideration, members recognized that the current process for these two courts to request a funding floor amount augmentation is onerous and time-consuming, especially when considering there are automatic funding adjustments included in the workload formula for the other 56 trial courts. During last week's meeting, FMS considered options that are presented on page 16 of the meeting materials and is recommending option one for an annual adjustment to the base funding flow amount in years when CPI, the Consumer Price Index, is provided in the budget, and it would be equal to the same CPI percentage provided to the other 56 trial courts. That concludes our presentation, and we will be happy to take any questions.
Oksana, as always, thank you very much. So folks, the recommendation is at page 16 of the materials. Are there any questions for Oksana or in general concerning the recommendation from FMS? Doesn't appear to be. Is there a motion concerning the recommendation set forth? And but I guess I'll ask a question real quick, Oksana. So with this gives those two courts the automatic inflationary adjustment only if the inflationary adjustment is part of the budget for the remaining 56 courts.
That's correct.
But it would not prevent those two courts from asking for an adjustment if the inflationary adjustment did not come forward.
That's also correct.
Great, thank you. With that, is there a motion?
This is Judge Siebert. I'll make a motion to approve it.
Judge seconds.
Judge Siebert moves, Bartleson seconds, that the recommendation at page 16 be approved. Now that it's open, an open motion, is there any further discussion? Seeing and hearing none, is there any opposition to the motion that the recommendation at page 16 of the material be approved? Hearing none, is the chair, I'll deem that recommendation unanimously approved for forwarding to JBBC at their meeting next week. Oksana, thanks so much. Moving now, folks, to item number 4 on our agenda. Oksana, you're not off the hot seat yet, so thank you very much. This is the 2021-2022 final adjustments for year-end fund balances. We do this every year, folks. Here we are again. I'll let Oksana present, but this is typically good news, is essentially saying we're following the rules. I'm oversimplifying it. Oksana, I'll let you detail it. Turn it over to you.
Thank you, Judge Conklin. Good afternoon again. This is Oksana Tak, Senior Analyst with Budget Services. Government Code Section 77203, Subdivision B, allows trial courts to carry over unexpended funds in the amount not to exceed 1% of court's operating budget from the prior fiscal year, commencing June 30, 2014, and concluding June 30, 2019. Commencing June 30, 2020, a trial court may carry over unexpended funds in the amount not to exceed 3% of court's operating budget from the prior fiscal year. Statute requires that in January of each fiscal year, after review of available trial court reserves as of June 30th of the prior fiscal year, Judicial Council shall finalize allocations to the trial courts, and each court's finalized allocation shall be offset by the amount of reserves in excess of the amount authorized to be carried over. Trial court submitted their final 3% computation with final year information, and the figures in attachment A on page 20 of the materials reflect the trial court's finalized and closed accounting records for 21-22. Column L displays court's final total reduction computation of 13.9 million. On the following page, attachment B provides details on the final allocation adjustments for the 21-22 unbalanced 3% cap adjustment and TCDF funds held on behalf of request amounts that will be allocated for current year expenditures shown in column F. And those will be distributed in January 2023 distribution to the trial courts, as well as amounts that will be retained in TCTF for the future year expenditures. They are shown in column G. The kickback is asked today to approve 3% fund balance cap reduction allocation of 13.9 million to match the trial court's final calculations of the amount above the 3% fund balance cap, which will net to 1.8 million after the total funds held on behalf reduction. And that will be presented for consideration by the Judicial Branch Budget Committee and then Judicial Council at its business meeting in January 20th, 2023. That concludes our presentation. And again, we will be happy to answer any questions.
Once again, Oksana, thank you very much. John Zlatko or Fran, is there anything else you wanted to add to this? If I understand it correctly, what it means, to, as I intend to do and oversimplify, at the end of the day, we're giving back, after all the offsets, after funds held on behalf of, we're giving back $1.8 million out of a budget of how many billion?
Approximately three.
Almost $3 billion. Yeah.
So, again, I don't mean to, who am I to boast, but it sounds pretty impressive to me that our numbers, from an accounting perspective, from a multi-billion dollar budget came down to just short of $2 million that all has to be, is it? Is that an accurate summary, John or Zlatko?
Judge Conklin, thank you. Yes, absolutely. And, law allows for up to 3% of the past year's expenditures to be retained by courts, and no issue whatsoever with the action I think you guys will be taking in a few minutes.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much. So with that, any further questions of Oksana or others concerning the recommendation at page 19 of the materials? And hearing none, is there a motion?
Judge Kelly, I move to adopt the recommendation.
Bartleson seconds.
You. Moved and seconded that the recommendation at page 19 of our materials be approved for consideration by JBBC to the Judicial Council. Is there any, that's my clock. Any opposition to the motion? Hearing no opposition to the motion, I'll deem the recommendation at page 13, 19, unanimously approved. And now we turn to item 5 of our agenda, the final item. This is Court Interpreter Program, the allocation methodology. Again, this comes to us from an FMS recommendation of our meeting next week. And we're going to do a minor change here. And Douglas Denton is going to present on this instead of Brandy. Douglas, are you with us?
I am, Judge Conklin. Good afternoon. Thank you. Good afternoon, committee members. I'm Douglas Denton with the Judicial Council Language Access Services Program. The report on this item begins at page 22 of your materials. For today's Court Interpreters Program allocation methodology recommendation from the Funding Methodology Subcommittee, or FMS, I'll begin with a brief background. In January 22, the Judicial Council approved recommendations from the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee, or TCBAC, for an ongoing workload-based allocation methodology for interpreter funding, including cross assignments, benefit cost changes, and unspent funds effective July 1, 2022. The methodology outlines the years in which expenditure data will be used for allocating funds to trial courts up to the appropriation amount, requires courts to return unspent funds for allocating to courts with a shortfall while operating within the appropriation amount, allocates staff interpreter benefit costs back to courts dollar for dollar, and requires courts to offset interpreter expenses to courts providing cross assignments. Finally, the Ad Hoc Interpreter Subcommittee would continue its work to review pandemic impact and data considerations for the 23-24 allocation methodology. The FMS has an annual work plan that is updated annually and approved by TCBAC. This past summer, the item to develop an ongoing workload-based methodology for allocating interpreter funding for 2023-24 was approved for working on this fiscal year. As a result, 5 recommendations were developed for TCBAC to consider today, which are in the report at pages 25 and 26 of your materials, and I'll just go through them quickly. Number one is exclude the 2021 pandemic year from the 3-year average expenditure data used in the model indefinitely. Number two is continue using historical expenditure data in the model while the Ad Hoc Subcommittee continues collaborating with the Language Access Services Program on possible data enhancements and usage in the allocation methodology to improve upon current interpreter needs. Number three, in the event courts experience a shortfall, first utilize other courts' interpreter allocation savings to make up the difference up to the appropriation amount. If funding from savings is not enough to cover the shortfall, the interpreter fund balance would be utilized via a proportional allocation methodology. And should there still not be enough interpreter funding in the fund balance to cover any shortfall, the court with the shortfall would be covered by its own operating budget. Should the fund balance be reduced significantly over time to support interpreter program operations, a future budget change proposal may be required to keep pace with increasing costs. Number four, for cross assignments, home courts are to submit reimbursement requests directly to receiving courts for the receiving court to cover the cost of the interpretation. And finally, number five, approve video remote interpreting or VRI as a future consideration in the allocation methodology as more information on VRI definitions are developed and utilization is reviewed. That concludes my presentation. I would like to invite any of the FMS members to comment further on today's recommendations, and we're also happy to take any questions.
Oh, Doug, you're muted.
Sorry. Douglas, thanks so much. I think it was a great summary of FMS, the work they did and the recommendation they made. But if there is any FMS member on right now who wants to supplement Douglas's comments, please feel free to do so. And at the same time, if there's any questions, Chad, I see your hand up. Go ahead.
Thanks, Judge. I'm actually making this comment not in my capacity as an FMS member, but I also serve as the CEO chair of Interpreter Region 2. And the regional chairs had a meeting yesterday, and I just wanted the group to know that among the regions, there is significant interest in recommendation four, especially to the extent that part of the recommendation is charging the ad hoc interpreter subcommittee with working with JCC staff to develop the payment reimbursement method. And so I think it's safe to say that the interpreter regions, at least the regional chairs, support the recommendation, and in particular are looking forward to getting into the subcommittee, getting into the nuts and bolts of how that's going to work if this group does indeed approve these recommendations.
Thank you, Chad. I appreciate that. Chris, your hand was up.
Yeah, thank you, Judge. And just no question for Chad in your capacity as the regional chair. Was there also support among all four regional chairs for recommendation number five concerning VRI?
I would say yes, although I guess, and Douglas can sort of reality check me on this if he thinks I'm wrong, I think that the regions are sort of not all in the exact same place when it comes to where we all are on implementing VRI. So I do think there was support for it, but I would say VRI is a little bit different across the state depending on what region you're in.
And Chad, this is Douglas. I would echo that. Something we're working on with the regional chairs is to come up with some common definitions around VRI. Some of the courts have a per diem associated with VRI assignments. Other courts just call them remote assignments, and there's not a per diem, especially if it's done within the county. So we're working with the regions for uniformity. And then also something that we're going to work on in terms of court interpreter data collection systems is trying to gauge the cost of interpretations so we have a better handle on which kinds of assignments cost more. And then with that information, we can work with the FMS on seeing if, for example, if a receiving court might need a higher allocation because they use a lot of remote services. So I would say that's work that is ongoing and we're not quite there yet.
This is a work in progress. This is a work in progress on how we decide to allocate for VRI. This is not a work in progress on VRI itself. This is just to allocate the courts that use VRI. Is that correct?
Correct.
I'm sorry, Chris, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, I was just thanking for the additional clarification from Chad and Douglas. That's helpful.
Great. So any additional comments on the recommendations set forth at page 25 and 26 of your materials concerning the court interpreter program funding allocations? Hearing none, is there a motion to approve those five recommendations?
Rule moves.
Is there a second?
Moved and seconded that the five recommendations as stated at page 25 and 26 be approved for forwarding and consideration to JBBC at their meeting next week. Is there any opposition to that motion? Hearing no opposition to the motion, as the chair, I'll deem the motion unanimously approved. So folks, I think that completes our work. Brandy, it just got back to me. Oh, Judge Larch, did you have a comment?
Quick question, I want to revisit the CARE Act issue. On the recommendations on page 7 of 26, there were three recommendations. We dealt with the first with the motion where we changed the FTE to the 0.50 and voted on that, but did we include recommendations 2 and 3 in the amended motion? That was to approve TCBAC to perform a reconciliation using the CARE Act spending reports and court projections, and then 3 was to direct the FMS to develop an allocation for CARE Act funding for 2023-24 and subsequent years. I don't know if that was included in the
motion. It was certainly my intent. I believe my language was, is there a motion to approve the recommendation that set forth at page 7 with the modification to item 1. But is there any member that misinterpreted that? Because Judge Larch is right. I want to make sure I didn't just pile it on. Is there any member who voted to approve who did not intend to approve all 3 of those items with the modification to 1? Okay, Judge Larch, thanks for bringing that up. I think that clarifies it. So with that, I'll reconfirm that they're all 3 recommendations at page 7 were approved unanimously with the minor alteration. Also, Brandy, as our ever efficient staff member, has also got back to me on the approval of the minutes. And it turns out that yes, even though you were not present at the meeting, as I understand it, and Brandy, I'll just turn to you to clarify rather than restate it and confuse everybody. Go ahead.
All righty. And I'm going to do a bit of restating myself as we reached out to the Leadership Services office. So members who are absent from the meeting are still able to offer corrections to the minutes and vote on approval. The minutes are simply creating a record. A yes vote does not necessarily imply that the voting member was at the meeting or agrees with the content. They're just voting to include the minutes as record.
Excellent. And for my 2 cents worth, I would suggest that maybe that be made clear to a bunch of other advisory committees and even the council. Because at so many meetings, we have people say, I wasn't there, I'm going to abstain, and they don't have to. So who am I?
That's the plan.
Okay. Who am I? But that's my 2.5 cents worth. All right, folks. Hi, thank you very much.
Judge Ryan, I wanted to let you know I joined you for that last item only. So.
Oh, thank you, Judge. For the minute.
Always welcome. So thank folks, you. Thank you very much. This meeting went a little shorter than anticipated, but I think we had plenty of time for discussion, especially on item 1. I really appreciate that. I think that's what enhances our credibility when we, you know, take a look at some of these items and say, hold on a minute. And so as Judge Siebert noted, even though they come to us as recommendations from our subcommittees, we're the committee that actually makes a final recommendation, can modify it, as you've just seen we did, in any way appropriate. So thank you all so much for your consideration of this. I hope you don't mind that I'm getting you out 50 minutes early. Maybe we'll have a chance.
Judge, can I just keep you guys for 10 more seconds? Can we, with the new information, revisit the motion to approve the minutes from the September 8th meeting?
Sure. So so for all folks who have an opportunity to review the minutes, whether you were present or not, is there any abstention to the motion to approve the minutes? And therefore, is there any opposition to the motion to approve the minutes? So I'll modify it, Brandy, to show the minutes were unanimously approved.
Thank you very much.
And by the way, you remind me, we're in the process, folks, of putting together a training, an educational session that will accomplish two purposes. One, for those members who are relatively new to the group, just to maybe drill down a little bit into what the work we do, and also, candidly, to get us together. I'm looking forward to trying to get a face-to-face together. We're not going to be unreasonable about it, but I'm hoping for the end of the year, if not early in January, we can get a face-to-face meeting where we're all in the same room and can actually chat about things. So that's still to come. Brandy, do we have another meeting on calendar?
Not at this time. We will be sending a poll out for consideration of a recommendation from the Family and Juvenile Law Advisory Committee. and this is related to firearms relinquishment funding. So we'll be sending a poll out within the next couple of business days to meet on that one.
Great. Anything else for the good of the order, folks? Except my closing comment that I think Judge Reinhardt's probably going to join in too, and that is go Dodgers. Right, Judge Reinhardt? All right, folks. Thanks so much for all your hard work. Be safe and have a great holiday, Thanksgiving holiday, and Veterans Day tomorrow. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.